Hi, welcome to another episode of the ARC podcast with Jen and Lindsay. Jen, how are you today?
Hey, Lindsay, I'm great. I'm excited today. We have a great guest on our program. I have Kelly Mahler, who I know a lot of our listeners will be excited to hear from today. Kelly has earned her doctorate in occupational therapy from, you're going to have to help me on this university, Misericordia University in Pennsylvania.
It's close enough. Misericordia.
Misericordia. She's an occupational therapist and she's been an occupational therapist for 20 years, serving school-age children and adults. Kelly is a winner of multiple awards, including the 2020 American Occupational Therapy Association Emerging and Innovative Practice Award and a Mom's Choice Gold Medal. She's an adjunct faculty member at Elizabethtown College in Elizabethtown, Pennsylvania, as well as Misericordia University, Dallas, Pennsylvania. Kelly is co-principal investigator in several research projects pertaining to topics such as interoception, self-regulation, trauma, and autism. Kelly is an international speaker and frequently presents on these topics. So Kelly, we're so excited to have you here. Thank you for joining us on our podcast.
Well, thank you very much, Jen and Lindsay, for having me here. I'm looking forward to this conversation.
So first, you just have to jump right in and tell us, what is interoception and how does it relate to self-regulation and like those strategies? I think most of us know about the self-regulation stuff, but some of us are new to the interoception work.
Yeah. So interoception, I know it's not a very sexy name, so don't let it scare you, but I did not name this. It is a sense within all of our bodies. And interoception's biggest job is just to monitor the condition of our body or how our body is feeling. So if you love science, I'll just give you a really brief overview that interoception, just like all of our other sensory systems, has like a set of receptors pulling in sensory information. So our interoceptors are located like through all of the parts of our body, our heart, our lungs, our stomach, our skin, our eyeballs. Like these receptors are located almost everywhere, pulling in information about how all of these different body parts are feeling. And what we know from research, as well as I think from a lot of lived experience, is that we need to be very clear on how our body is feeling in order to be able to self-regulate that our body. So interoception is like providing us almost with a foundation. Like we need to understand how our body feels so that we can regulate and meet our body's needs.
Awesome. So you've been working on this interoception curriculum, and I'm from like reading your story, how did you come like to being like the foremost person to like work on this? Like what excited you about it, and how does your curriculum kind of help families?
Yeah. So when I first learned about interoception, like at that point in time, I had never even heard the word before. And as an occupational therapist, like I've been practicing for 22 years, I've always been like really, really interested in supporting self-regulation, mental health. I love sensory, all things sensory. So interoception kind of brings all three of my passion areas together. Like it brings sensory together with self-regulation and with mental health. And up until the point before I learned about interoception, I was working on all of those areas with my clients, like trying to help them, empower them with self-regulation. And I always felt like there was like something missing. Like so many of my clients, they could like memorize these self-regulation programs, like the zones or your stress thermometer, but they just couldn't put it into place in real life. And I'm like, something is missing, but I just don't know what. And it wasn't until I started reading, I learned about this word interoception, started reading the very tedious neuroscience articles on this topic. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I think interoception could be the missing piece, or at least one of the missing pieces. And I'm like such a curious person. Like my husband calls me the interviewer. So I like go right to my clients, right to their families. And I start asking all kinds of questions about interoception. And what we discovered is like, oh my goodness, like this is such a big deal. And this is a really important aspect of all of our lives. So that's kind of like my story in a nutshell.
Yeah. I love that you call yourself like when I read your bio and you're like, it's my geek, like the nerdy geek part of me that like loves to read these research articles is how I got here. Cause I feel the same way. Like I'm an attorney and like, I'm like that nerd who just wants to read all the briefs and all like the Medicaid regulations. And like my boss, like Gary's like, so glad you're here. So you can like read all the, I mean, he's always reading them too, but I actually enjoy like reading through all of that stuff and like looking like deeper and deeper. And I think that's where that curiosity is so key to like, especially with our kids with autism, because it's like, you have to sit back and be curious and like observe and ask these like detailed questions in order to kind of figure out what's going on and what could be the best treatment for them. So like, I'm happy. I'm so excited that you found this and that you're working so hard on it. And your website is so useful. Like all of the programming that you're doing is so like timely and key. I think like you're saying with like the mental health piece too, because a lot of our kids obviously have the comorbidities of the anxiety and other things. So talk about like maybe a couple stories or like how the, once you started figuring out this interoception stuff, how did it help your clients? And like, I could talk about my Jack all the time, like all through this, but I want to hear about you, like and your own clients and like how you saw it working.
Well, there's so many benefits of this work. It's really hard to put it into like, I think, okay, I might change my mind on this, but maybe one of the biggest pieces is like how interoception drives curiosity, because what interoception science has shown is that each of our bodies have a very unique experience. And so what my body feels like when I'm hungry is different than what your body feels like when you're hungry. You know, what my body feels like when I'm anxious, different than what your body feels like when you're anxious. And then when you also add on top of that, different neurotypes. So like, let's say like, you know, for myself, I am not autistic, but I support an autistic client. Then we have two different neurologies happening at the same time too. So we're both interceptively different. We are, you know, neurotype different. And so we need curiosity to figure out how each other are feeling. And that's really what all of my resources are about, is helping like the person themselves, the child, the adult, figure out their own body. But it also is like such an incredible framework. And I hear this from so many people, like just how much you learn as kind of like the outsider, like the parent or the teacher or the therapist, you just learn so much about the client or the student that it just helps us to be so much more supportive and offer supports that are actually a match to what that person needs.
Yeah, I know you've done some great work with our friend Chloe Rothschild. So talk a little bit about that workbook and the work that you've done with her, because I've learned just in my short time of knowing Chloe so much from her, and I'm excited to just keep learning from her. But I know exactly what you're saying about that curiosity and like keeping that open, because I think it's key. But let's talk about your relationship with Chloe and that workbook that you guys worked on together.
Yeah. Chloe Rothschild and I have been friends, oh my goodness, for like over 10 years now. And we met at Ocali, which is Ohio based conference. So I'm just giving a shout out to all you Ohio people listening. Woo-hoo. Met at OcalaCon. And she came to one of my talks on interoception and she was like, this is like my missing piece. And so we just became fast friends and colleagues. We've written a book called My Interoception Workbook together, which is almost, it's a really cool book, because like the first part of it is almost like, I want to say like a social narrative, and it describes to the person reading it, what is this sense we call interoception? It helps them explore their own internal experience. And then the second half of the book is all about like, here are some, like we call them hacks or like strategies you can use to outsmart, like if you're having like some interoception differences. So it's a really cool book. We've written it. We have presented together many, 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 many times. We've traveled together. We've had some really fun times together.
I think I've heard you guys speak at OcaliCon this year.
Yes, we actually, yeah. Okay, we didn't.
You guys did an amazing job.
Thank you. It was our 9th year together, and we were invited to do the keynote this year. So that was like both of our dreams. We wished it was in person on the big stage, but we were still very thankful for that experience.
I know.
Yeah, like what Chloe brings to the work as like so many people, is her own lived experience. Like we were going back and talking about, we're all so different. So to have many people represented talking about their interceptive experience, I think is really valuable.
Yeah. I had a moment this weekend. My son broke his arm this weekend and he was like running around and slipped on something and like fell on his arm, and he has a compound fracture. Like it was disgusting. I won't talk about it too much so our listeners who are driving or whatever are like, good God. But it was bad. Okay. And it was interesting. He's 13, has autism. And as soon as the medics got there, he wasn't even crying. Like I can't even explain how, I mean, we say he's so tough and he is tough, but it's also like the difference in like how I experience pain and how he experiences pain. It's very different. And so anyway, we get to the hospital and he's talking to people and they're asking him all these questions and he can't see his arm at the time. Like we have it like covered up because it's like in a splint. And as soon as they brought it back out, then he was like all the words started coming out and all of the, what's going on? Am I going to be okay? What is happening? You know? And it's so interesting. And then we came home and then like the next morning, he was great. He didn't really have that much pain. We came home and the next morning he was like having some serious behavior stuff, like just so upset, kind of throwing things around. And Chris and I, my husband, were like, what's going on? You know, like, Jack, are you in pain? No, I'm not in pain. But really like a lot of behaviors. And I asked Chris, I was like, well, you gave him ibuprofen at this time. And he's like, no, I didn't give it to him at this time. And I'm like, okay, he's in pain. He just doesn't know how to tell us he's in pain. And we see it through the behavior. And I think a lot of times at school or anywhere, we're all just like, God, look at this child with autism and these behaviors. And how do we regulate like the behavior? And how do we put this behavior plan together? And then sometimes it just, like they're in pain or they're dealing with these, you know, they're hungry or their stomach is having issues because they have these gut related problems. And so can you talk to us a little bit about pain and how this program helps with that? Because I'm still a little, I have these moments where I'm like, how did I forget? I went through the program and like did this with him, but I still forget that a lot of this, the behaviors that you see are because he can't tell me and can't put into words what's going on inside of his body.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, interoception is the sense of how we all feel pain. So there's a very obviously tight connection there. And, you know, there's so many possibilities of interoception differences. So we could have a breakdown in noticing our body signals. So we know that some people have a very muted inner experience. Like they just might genuinely not be experiencing pain the same way that someone else might be, or they could have a very intense inner experience where they feel every tiny little bump or scrape in like really big, painful ways. It's not them being dramatic or what we might like say in behavior terms, attention seeking. Like these are real sensory experiences, just like you're mentioning about your son. And, you know, thankfully we're getting away from behaviorism and shifting to a more inner curiosity, empathetic approach, like everything you just said about your son. And so we could have a breakdown in the noticing, but then also, like you're saying, there is such a big language component in the traditional pain space. Like it is helpful, let's just say, for someone to be able to share their inner experience so that they can get the proper medical treatment. And when that language is difficult and that someone has a really hard time putting language to their inner experience, they are at high risk of being misunderstood, right? And that's how like kind of like behaviorism, like we would misinterpret all of their external behaviors and observations, but there's so many things we're missing internally. And so if we can help, and it really depends, if like some of my resources are all about helping people to notice their body sensations in more reliable ways. And there's another big component of my work that's that language piece. And it doesn't need to be spoken language. Like it can be through alternative forms of communication. And we also, like, I love what you were saying. Like you were getting so deeply curious at the way your son was expressing his inner experience, which wasn't through words, but you were still deeply considering, like, you know, all of the observations you were saying and like really saying, okay, what is he telling me about his internal experience, which can be really hard guesswork, but you are trying and being curious. And I feel like that's so validating to a person when we're trying to understand.
Yeah. And you just don't get the same, like strategy or like the way that they deal with it at the hospital is so different than like how you go through it in this program, because they just were like, from a 1 to 10, like, where's your pain? And it's just like, he can't tell us from 1 to 10. That's hard enough for me to tell you from 1 to 10, because I don't know how to, there's so much that goes into that 1 to 10, you know, like it's, you'd think it'd be a simple way. And I know they're very, very attached to that in the healthcare field. So that I know.
I don't know why. I do know, I'm like working with a group in the UK that's trying to revamp the pain scales for people that have interoception differences, but I think we have a long way to go. We just know the pain scale is not a match, but we don't know what to do instead. But
I saw a pain scale recently where it's like 0, you have no pain. 1, it's as if you stubbed your toe. 2, it's as if you hit your elbow. 3, it's as if you hit your head on the wall. Like, it had very nice descriptions to it. So that way then a person could at least attempt to describe their pain, which I appreciated. I think I took a picture of it. So that way then we could use it with my son, who is autistic and has the biggest, highest pain tolerance we've ever seen, like in a kiddo. But no, it was a nicer way to break it down. Cause even I was a nurse before I became an advocate. And I mean, even on your best day, trying to figure out if your broken toe or your broken finger, what your pain scale was hard. But that, like, breaking it down, like, imagine you have a tooth, it's the worst toothache you've ever had, was like 8. Yeah. And then like 10 was, you can't get the words out to tell me what your pain is, mm-hmm. which was nice.
I like that some of that is describing kind of more concrete, like based on what I saw about my experience, not like what I'm feeling about my experience, because that can be a little bit more concrete for a person.
Yeah, I appreciated that. Like, I thought, like, I never thought of it that way. Like, normally I'm just like, well, I mean, it's probably a 2 or 3. It's not the worst pain I've ever felt. But now, like, I could see that potentially, like, the pain could be a 4 or 5 or 8, depending on. So,
yeah, it's interesting. Kelly, talk about food. Like,
yes,
I saw that you did a really cool program on like ARFID, and that's actually still going on. I think you can still like access that, but like selective eating and like just how a lot of our kids, my son himself again, has a lot of issues with his oral motor and like food and, you know, if he's hungry and overeating and all of that. So talk a little bit about how interoception can help with eating.
Oh boy, another really great but very big question. We barely fit this in a 2-hour course, just to be honest. Okay, so what do I want to highlight? Our primary focus was on feeling safe around food. And there's, gosh, like I am a parent of a child that has feeding differences. So I can speak to the experience that some parents might have over the anxiety when your child has feeding differences. And we have all of this external pressure. Like, our role as a parent is to make sure our kids have a wide variety of food. And, you know, like, it's just like so much external pressure, which then to me was creeping into the meal times and the feeding times with my child, with my daughter. So
it's 3 really, times a day and more, yes, you know, yes, it's all day.
Yes,
they have to have a day. Snack. They have to, yeah, it's just a circle of food is what we called it, trying to get women to eat.
Yeah. So how do we, again, it's going back to curiosity. How do we figure out like how they feel around certain foods? Like, what is it about this food that makes you feel unsafe? Like, can we help you figure it out so we can adapt it to help drive that feeling of safety? How do we get rid of all of the what mealtime should look like kind of things and figure out how eating looks and feels safe to you. So maybe it's not sitting at a table. Maybe you need to pace in between bites. Maybe you need to have your iPad as like they call it distracted eating during mealtimes, which in my mind, I was taught, oh no, you can't have a screen at the table. You know what I mean? Like, it's just like all of these things that creep into us as parents and really trying hard to let that go and help our kids feel as regulated and safe around foods. And what a lot of people with lived experience are telling us is the safer they feel around foods, the more flexible they, and the more willing they are to take risks to try to find new foods and increase that, like that list of safe foods. So I just want to validate it's a hard process to like really shift your plate. I'm still working on this as a parent. And how do I just get curious and work with my daughter, help her feel regulated and safe so that then she has the capacity to begin to try new foods? And, you know, just a secondary point right there, like when our bodies are under stress, like many of our kids are, that automatically many times turns off your interoceptive system, like for hunger and thirst. Like if you think about like when you're having a really stressful day, this is not true for everyone, but a lot of people, like you get stressed and your digestion shuts down. Those feelings of hunger go offline. So, you know, that's just another importance of why we need to get more regulation and safety.
Yeah. You know, I totally agree. And there's some days where I'm so stressed and then someone's like, take a drink of water. And I take a drink of water and I'm like, why was that there? All I had to do was take a drink of water. And it's true. Like everything, it's too over. I think having autism itself is just so overwhelming for someone. And especially on the hard days, everything is hard and just very, or the relationship with the person, having just really good words to use and like a system that's consistent has been really helpful with my son. So I think just kind of like understanding interoception itself, like for me, when I first was introduced to it, I was like, this is kind of like ridiculous. I can't believe I have to sit here and talk about what's he feeling in his eye or what's he feeling on his hand, you know, like all these little things each time. And I'm like, we're going to use our OT minutes to do this, you know? And I was like, but then once you start doing it and you're gaining like Jack, the words that he uses now to explain, just like you were saying, not just like I'm in the yellow zone. Like it's just, I get so much more information now. I can't tell you how helpful it is for all things. So especially in one area, we have a lot of anxiety. Jack does. And I have anxiety. And so it doesn't help with the both of us kind of dealing with that and going to school. So we've used a lot of this, a lot of your work to kind of help him with that barrier. So how can interoception strategies help with anxiety?
Mm-hmm. Well, first, it can help you discover what anxiety means for you, because I have so many clients that can use emotion words, but they're just memorized. Like they don't, it's not a match for like their inner experience. Like, so someone somewhere along the line said, anxiety is when your heart races and when your skin is sweaty. And if that's not a match for your experience, then that leaves you with such confusion. But then we're like, okay, that's what anxiety should feel like for you. And when you feel that way, take deep breaths, you know, use a fidget. So like you're now like, this is like so unhelpful because that word anxiety is not a match for my experience. And yet you're then telling me to use these coping strategies that again are not a match. So it's just very confusing. So when you use an interoception approach, you like, I would imagine you are with Jack, like you're helping him to understand his body, like his own authentic experience. And then you can match the coping strategies. Okay, when you notice that feeling in your body, like whatever word he's using, whenever you notice that in your body, like let's help you find a couple things that might make your body feel more comfortable in that moment. And you can explore those strategies because deep breathing is great, but it doesn't work for every single person, myself included. Just want to put that out there. So when you understand your body, then you can start to explore strategies that work for you and your body. So I don't know if I completely answered your question there, but, yeah, it can help you understand what that anxiety word means for you and help you connect to coping strategies that are an actual match for your system.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if I want to admit this, but Jack and I talk a lot about, he wants to know how I'm feeling. And then when he asks me how I'm feeling, then it gives me kind of like a doorway to ask him. So like when I have some like really important meeting or something's going on that's stressing me out, I sweat. And so I'll be like, he'll be like, Mom, are you sweating? And I'm like, I'm sweating. And he'll be like, let me smell your armpit, Mom. He's like, yep, you're sweating, Mom. And then I'm like, how are you feeling? So then when he's stressed about like going to school, I'm like, are you sweating? And he doesn't really have that, but he'll have the heart, fast heartbeat. And so he'll be like, listen here, Mom, listen to my heartbeat. And I'll like, listen to it. And I'll be like, yep, I can hear that it's really fast for you. And so it kind of like connects us. And so I've been telling people about this because I've always done the kind of relationship based work with him, between him and I and my husband and him, like everything with Jack, any progress he's made, it's been like with someone else, whether it's me and Jack or my husband and Jack or his friend, best friend. And it's because he needs to connect, like we all do, to someone else to like, in order to like feel safe and good. And like, you know, just being connected into the world is kind of like being connected with like someone else. And so I think it's been really helpful, but I've learned, so, like you're saying, like I've learned so much about my own body that we're just supposed to, we just grew up like kind of knowing this stuff. But did we really know it? Like, you know, we didn't. And so I'm learning right along with him. So do you feel in your work, are you seeing that too, where like the parent and the child are both learning at the same time?
Big time. Yes. Absolutely. And myself is included in that bunch. And I think I don't want to overgeneralize here, but I think many of us grew up in a period of time where it was considered weak to listen to our bodies. Like we were programmed from an early age to push through, no pain, no gain. You know, like we were programmed to ignore our bodies. So this work is like really revolutionary for the parents I support too, myself in that bunch. So it's a learning process together.
Yeah, sure is. Okay, so give us like everything we need to know to connect families to your work. So any upcoming events or programs you're doing, what you're like, where you'll be, if you're going to be at Ocali again this year, like anything that you can give us so that parents, because I just know that there's a lot of parents out there that listen to our podcasts or who are connected with the ARC that already know who you are, but there's some who might not and really who need to know. And there's a lot of teachers and parent mentors and people who we're connected with that I would love to connect with. Anything you're doing like upcoming.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Probably the easiest way to keep track of me is on my website, which is www.kelly-mahler.com. I have lots of free resources on there. It's really important to me. So you can, if you want to take the next step in learning, there's lots of things you could do on there. And plus we have some of the paid resources that we mentioned too. Through the website, you can also sign up for our newsletter, which would help you know like all of the events that are coming up. We have a couple really exciting things in the works, like a course on interoception and AAC. We have a course on gestalt language processing and interoception coming up. We have a course on interoception and masking. Like we have some really cool topics I'm excited about. And I will be back at OcalaCon this year. At least with one session talking about co-regulation and interoception. And social media is another great place. So there's a lot of different places you can find me to follow along.
Yeah. I'll let you go, but I want to know about that gestalt language. Can you talk to a little bit about it? Because I'm confused. Mm-hmm. But just kind of just like give me a small tip.
I'm probably not the best person to be describing it on the fly, which is why I brought in two autistic SLPs to do the course. But so after I tell you what it is, then I would encourage you also to Google it to make sure I'm explaining it correctly. It's something I am like so deeply curious about right now, but it's just a different wiring language. In fact, a lot of us can be gestalt language processors where instead of learning language in one little like word at a time, we learn it in chunks. So this is really relatable to a lot of people that might have echolalia, we might call it, or scripting. Mm-hmm. And it is a very meaningful way of acquiring language. And so in the past, those scripts and echolalia were deemed as meaningless forms of communication. Sometimes they were even by behaviorists tried to be extinguished, which is, you know, thankfully we're learning and doing better now. And really looking at that as very, very meaningful ways of communicating. And we can use that style of acquiring language to help expand language. And that's where my SLP friends come in. I cannot tell you exactly how to do that, but I just think it's just very important to know about Gestalt language processing, especially if you have a child or a student that is using scripts, using echolalia in any of their language.
And then one more question for you. I have a lot of kids who we work with at the ARC who are like on a 504 plan, very doing very well academically, at school all day, killing it, coming home, total mess. Mm-hmm. I will say my kids kind of experienced that a little bit too. And I think you did mention it, like masking, and you're going to do something about mm-hmm. masking.
Yeah.
But like, how can we teach, like, as a parent, how do I teach, like, my IEP team, like, I know what you're seeing at school. That's not what's happening, like, inside of his little body. And when he's coming home, he's falling apart. And how can we help the school kind of gain this language, I guess, or I don't know, some kind of, like, empathy, compassion for somebody who, like, looks great on paper. Oh, he looks great here all day. I don't know why he doesn't want to come to school. Or he looks great. I don't know why he's coming home falling apart. How can we help there?
Yeah, well, I think with these kids that are doing really well academically, this is like so common, and they work so hard all day long to mask, to hide what their inner experience is so that they can comply with the demands of school, and they are just exhausted. No resources left by the end of the day. So if we can have this interoception framework in place, they can offer insights into what their internal experience actually is at school, so that we can relay that message and say, hey, like, this is what the child's reporting. What could we do to help, you know, make the school experience just a little bit less taxing on their body? And that, I have to acknowledge, can take a lot of work, because so many of my clients, like you're explaining, like, they are fearful of admitting discomfort at school, because mm-hmm. it is just so deeply ingrained. It's not them refusing. Like, it is just an instinctual response. They're like, I'm fine. I'm fine. No, I'm fine. You know, because they have been conditioned to act fine. It's not a choice in this process. It is an unconscious trauma response or stress response. So I think we need to acknowledge that for some of these kids, it can take, we talk about in interception work, sometimes it's a lot of undoing before doing. So like, being really patient. And, you know, if they keep telling you during interception work, like, oh, my hands feel fine, my eyes feel fine, like, validate that. Okay. Like, I hear you. Thank you for sharing. And slowly over time, with all of that validation, hopefully they do start to see, like, we're validating anything they share with us, and they might take more risks at sharing, you know, something different, those little insights.
Well, Kelly, I can't tell you how great it is to hear that this is the kind of work that you do and that other people are doing this work, because like any kind of treatment that we've partaken in with either one of my kids, I have another child with Down syndrome. I feel like you can feel in your gut, at least at some point during it, I don't love, like, you know, like the, with the eating or something, like just take a bite or just do this or this part of it. With this program, this interoception, I feel no like drawback to it. Like, there's nothing
it's
in it.
It's great.
Yeah. Like, nothing is gross about it. Nothing is like, oh, mm-hmm. we're just trying to prepare them for the world. You know, we are preparing them for the world and actually doing it in a way that like is helping all of us feel like good about it. You know, like there's no, you're not rubbing up against any societal conditioning as much as, like you said, like undoing some things and helping them. So thank you for this. I just think it's just huge. And I'm so glad that it's becoming like very mainstream, because I feel like the first time I saw you at Ocali, it was like, what? And now like so yeah. many, my son's 13. I probably saw you like, I don't know, 8 years ago or something. And now it's like in my school and people are using it, you know, without a lot of advocacy, you know, okay. which I feel like you probably had to advocate for this to be
I guess
mainstream.
Still. Yeah, we're still advocating. Yes, but thank you for all of everything you just said. That just makes me feel so good. Yeah, thank you.
No, thank you. And thanks for coming on the podcast. And we really appreciate your work. So everyone check out kellymahler.com. She does have a really great newsletter. I'm on it. So I get emails and I just get so much good information from it. So check that out, guys, and have a great week.